UK Wine Show, show number 78, Roses Port with Sarah Hicks. On this week's show, port.
It's for life, not just for Christmas.
And in the news this week, Hugh Johnson says goodbye to vintage years, Australian GI is left without a name, and Oddbins reports 2006 losses.
G'day! Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 78 for the 23rd of November 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're talking with Sarah Hicks. Sarah is the UK manager for Rankin Pomeroy Monopole, and they are the people behind the port houses Roses and San Pedro de Aguias. We talk with her about Roses, what they're trying to do in the UK, and which is more important, history or innovation. Just for your information, Roses Port is not available in the supermarkets, but it is available in restaurants and independent wine merchants in the UK. And their 10-year-old Tawny Port is a personal favourite of mine. I've tasted it loads of times in tastings, and it currently ranks second in 3050's top 30, so it's a cracking wine. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. Wine critic and author Hugh Johnson has declared that wine vintages hardly matter anymore. In his best-selling 2008 Pocket Wine Book, he argues that modern viticulture can mitigate the effects of drought or rain and can control most pests and diseases. As a result, he told The Times, any year is a perfectly good one for drinkers. In his opinion, the days of great vintage years and poor years are behind us, and it's wine snobbery, not quality, that is pushing up the price of the famous names. Next up, 14 grape growers and winemakers in the Coonawarra region of Australia have been left high and dry without a regional identity. They're situated in Panola within Coonawarra, but now that the boundaries have been redefined, they're unable to use the term on the label. To make matters worse, a proposal to make Panola a GI in its own right was rejected by the Coonawarra Grape Growers Association. The debate is raging and emotions are running high on both sides. Apparently, one of the 14 vineyards put up a sign saying Panola Wines, and days later the sign was littered with bullet holes. The growers have asked for an investigation into the decisions, but in the meantime they'll have to make do with labelling their wines with the broad zone name Limestone Coast. Finally this week, wine merchant Oddbins has reported losses of £8.7 million in 2006. That's almost triple the £3 million loss they made in 2005. The loss, they say, was partly due to lower margins. During the year, they abandoned individual price promotions in favour of lower all-year-round prices. Their sales were static at £121 million, and the group closed 18 stores, while opening 29 new Oddbins stores and converting some to the Nicholas fascia. Currently, there's 175 branches of Oddbins in the UK and 81 branches of Nicholas. The good news is the company's forecasting a significantly improved result for 2007. That's it this week, but 10 years ago, a Beaujolais Nouveau was bottled under a revolutionary closure called the Quick Cork. The self-opening cork was part plastic and part cork and could be opened without a corkscrew. Burgundy-based company Michel Picard bottled its 97-release Beaujolais Nouveau with what was described as the biggest innovation in closures of the century. Remember, that was in the days before the screw cap. Don't forget, you can get more detail on these news stories on the news homepage of our website, 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. Well, I hope Hugh Johnson hasn't been talking to Robert Joseph about creating a non-vintage Bordeaux that nobody would buy. That's exactly what Robert Joseph said he was going to be doing in the last week's show. I don't know if I agree with Hugh about vintages not counting, though. Certainly, the big companies have enough toys to mitigate some poor vintages, but some wines are better from year to year. We do change our wines and our tastings, partly because of vintage changes. One year may be better than the next, so we'll swap it with a better performing vintage from, say, a different part of the world. Also, looking at our database of wine ratings, it looks pretty obvious to me that some people prefer certain vintages. because we can see that the average ratings change over time with different vintages. The other thing you need to remember is that some wines age very quickly. For example, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, it's very disappointing after 2 or 3 years after vintage. It's lost its flavour and its acidity, which is a key part of the wine. So vintages are important. Certainly when you're purchasing wine, to make sure you get the most appropriate vintage for what you want to drink. And also because I believe that quality does vary from vintage to vintage. Probably not as much as the wine trade likes to pick it up. You know, particularly around vintages in Bordeaux, they make so much noise for virtually no reason at all. I think it's just an excuse for marketing. I can see where Hugh is coming from. I do think personally vintages are important. Feel a bit sorry for the Aussies over their GI or geographical indicators. GIs were sort of forced upon them as part of negotiations with the European Union in a deal to protect European regional names such as Champagne and Port. They did get better access to European markets, but look at the legal fights that are ensuing now, and I don't know if it's all worthwhile. You look at the drought, and the Aussies want to bring in wine from Margaret River, where they're not really suffering from a drought, but they can't because they've got a GI called Southeastern Australia, which is absolutely ruining their ability to bring in wines from Western Australia into that blend. So, yeah, maybe 10 years ago, they would have just made a wine with a bit of Western Australian wine in it. Can't anymore. So, GIs, they might have got access to some markets, but it looks like it's not doing them much good. In terms of what you can say for odd bins, well, not a lot, really. It's tough offering the same types of wines as the supermarkets, with less convenience and higher prices. They don't have a niche range that a true independent has, and it's a bloodbath on the high street, and I don't know if there really is a place in the long term for a large chain of wine specialists. Majestics continue to do well, but they're not on the high street, so they've got quite a different offering. That ends the news, but don't forget about our monthly poll. As part of the monthly poll, we're trying to drill into issues behind the news. So this week, the poll question is, the UK government advises drinking no more than 3 to 4 units of alcohol a day for men and 2 to 3 units for women, where a unit's about 8 grams of alcohol. Would you say you regularly drink more? Less? About the same? Don't know. Not even sure what a unit is. Or I don't worry about it. To give you an update on the poll, hardly anybody doesn't know what a unit is of alcohol is. So that's pretty good. 1%. 28% drink about that amount. 24% drink less, 32% drink more, and 15% don't even worry about it. Next week is the final chance to have your say, so do get in there and have your say, and we'll have a look at the results in a bit more detail. If you've got a question you'd like to have used as our poll to find out what people are saying, you can send it to me at chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk. If you've got a really good question, we may just run it in our monthly poll. So let's see where that gets to. Next up, we have the interview with Sarah Hicks, UK manager of Roses. Roses was started in 1855 by Austin Roses, a Bordeaux wine merchant. And in 1999, Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy, who owned them at the time, sold them to Vranken. At that stage, Roses didn't have any vineyards and were buying grapes in to make into wine. But Roses was a brand of international awareness, and this complemented Vranken's earlier purchase in 1986 of San Pedro de Aguilas, which included vineyards. And by putting the two together, you'll end up with vineyards and a very good brand, and the modern Roses was born. Let's have a listen to what Sarah has to say. Hi, I'm here with Sarah Hicks. She's the UK manager for Vranken Pommery Monopole. How are you, Sarah?
I am very well today. Thank you very much.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about port, and in particular, Roses Port.
Yep.
But do you want to just give us a bit of an overview, maybe a bit about Vranken in the first instance?
Sure. It's maybe not a name that you totally recognise, but Paul François Vranken started his champagne company some 30 years ago, and over a period of time he sort of moved into other markets. And so in 1986 he bought a port house, San Pedro, and in 1999 he bought the Roses company, actually the port house, not any vineyards. And then over the time we've now got over 300 hectares of A and A and B grade vineyards, and so we're pretty well set now. And 9 different Quintas in the Douro region. We obviously have Champagne.
Yeah, so. I presume Pommery, the big Pommery brand.
Pommery is one of our brands, but Heidsieck Monopole is also one of our brands. Demoiselle, Charles Lafitte, maybe some other names that you might recognise within the marketplace.
Are you almost like a small drinks conglomerate? Yeah, you've got your big players.
Yep. Well, you say the big players. In only just on 30 years, Paul Francois has actually taken his company from a startup to actually being the second largest producer of champagne within the region.
Yeah.
And certainly we also own the Listel company. And so we produce over 48 million bottles of rosé a year, still rosé.
Okay, so quite a bit of rosé.
Yeah. his philosophy is that we want to be the very best in chalk, the very best in schist for port, and the very best in sand. Hence, we have just over 2,000 hectares in the Van der Saab.
Down in this bottom of Languedoc.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, down in the south of France.
And that's where your rosé is coming from.
That's where our rosé is coming from.
Fantastic. What we really want to talk about is your port today, because we're going to be coming up to Christmas soon.
Yes.
And port's a fantastic drink at Christmas time.
It is, but I did really just wish that it wasn't only just for Christmas.
I know.
You feel like that slogan, you know, it's for life, not just for Christmas.
It's almost like a puppy, isn't it?
I know, but it's just one of our passions is to try and move port up the sort of drinking repertoire. So having it as an aperitif, having it with a meal, introducing it into the meal so that we don't just get stuck with this one bottle purchase a year at Christmas time.
I really like port in summer, actually.
Yeah.
Like a 10-year-old tawny, chill it right down. If you want a sort of a heavier red, but still quite refreshing,
sure.
Take the edge off it with a bit of chilling, and it's lovely.
Absolutely, and we definitely advocate that people should chill their ports, certainly from our point of view. We have lots of lovely, rich, luscious fruit, and we want that to come through. We don't want the big hit of alcohol, and as you say, it really makes it much more versatile if you can just chill it slightly.
Obviously, chilling port's not quite as easy as it sounds, because obviously when you drop the temperature, you take the edge off the alcohol, which is nice, freshen up the acidity a wee bit. But tannins, you know, some ports aren't really geared for cooling. Which ones would you recommend chilling down?
Well, we would certainly chill. We have a range called the Colours Collection, which I'd love to talk to you about. But we would certainly chill those. We would maybe some of our rubies just slightly. I think our LBVs are just fine at room temperature, although, you know, that's very difficult to know what room temperature is these days, but you know, around about 15-16 degrees works really well for an LBV. But certainly our tawnies, love to see them chilled, and I think they really, it makes them much more versatile, much more approachable.
Yep, no, I agree with that. So let's talk about your colour collection, because it's a wee bit funky, a wee bit different for port. What are you doing there?
Absolutely. Port, this is a fantastic category, and you've got all these superb dark brown bottles, all of the big names, I suppose. And we're a young company, although our heritage takes us back to 1855 when it was set up. But, you know, we're a young, forward-thinking company. We have a brand new cuvery, and we want people to think of ports as being very contemporary, very fresh drinking wines, and sort of move away some of the stereotypical images of port drinking. And so in amongst all of those dark bottles, there is some light, there's some colour, there's some youthfulness, some freshness.
Where are you selling these wines? Because I've seen the bottles, and they are quite nice looking, but I haven't seen them in supermarket shelves too much.
Yes, well, it's a bit of one of those chicken and egg stories, really. It's quite difficult to break into those big retailers. Mm-hmm. Probably the fact that the wines were designed first, and sort of the bottle and packaging came very much second, possibly shows through in terms of, to put it on the shelf, I have to remove two of those dark bottles. And from a retailer's point of view, that's quite a difficult call for a new kid on the block to come in and say, hi, we're here, can we please take away two of the established brands? But slowly. So we've been really working with the on-trade. Mm-hmm. Am I allowed to say our agents are Justerini and Brooks?
Yeah, that's fine.
And they have a big passion for the on-trade business. So very much hand-selling into sommeliers, restaurateurs, hoteliers, etc. But it also gives us the opportunity to sell to individual fine wine shops. And fortunately for us, one of our big successes has been Selfridges, who have taken on our gold bottle, our 10-year-old Tawny, and also our Red Reserve. So we're very pleased about that.
The colour range, it's the bottles are a particular colour that sort of gives you an idea of the colour of the wine inside,
yeah,
isn't it?
I think there's an element of trying to help the consumer as much as you can. As I said, it isn't the marketing side came very much to the secondary point. The wines were established first. We wanted them to be very young, very fresh. We want a lot of fruit. And the colours just almost reinforce that. So for our Red Reserve, it's a wonderful pillar box red. It sort of shouts at you and says, you know, look at me, I'm really youthful, vibrant, full of lovely red, luscious fruit. The white is almost like a ceramic bottle. It's sort of got an ethereal sort of quality to it. And chilled down, just lovely, and lots of food opportunities with that. And then we have our 10-year-old Tawny, and in the gold bottle, and then when you pour this lovely golden liquid out,
it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
so kind of hopefully it will just inspire consumers to think, ah, I know exactly what it is. Certainly seems to be a lot of confusion over, you know, the whole ruby tawny kind of argument and how does that work. So the bottles just slightly help nudge a consumer in a different direction to say, okay, we can help you with that.
The bottles would look quite good in a, you know, a cocktail bar or something like that. Have you ever thought about using port as a mixer?
Yep, we definitely have had some of our mixologists in some of our sort of more funkier bars. Certainly at Sketch, they've certainly helped use Rosas port and mixing it with other ingredients for us. And making either a longer drink. I still haven't quite found a good mix for port and champagne yet, but I'm working on it.
Tie the two together,
exactly.
Fantastic. And obviously you've got your normal sort of ports, you've got 10 and 20
We have the classic range too, because exactly, there is a place in the market for that. But again, you know, very much driven as being a very fresh style, big on fruit and flavour. So we have our 10-year-old, probably one of our most famous is the Infanta Isabel 10-year-old Tawny.
Yeah,
I think it's real benchmark stuff. I know I'm slightly biased, but I think it really delivers. And then we have a range that takes us from 20-year Tawny to our Dom Rosés, our over 40-year-old, which is just superb.
Coming back to the old Christmas market, there's been a bit in the press, in the wine press anyway, about sort of Christmas time, you know, port and champagne seem to get hammered. They're the two drinks that, you know, you more so for port than that, you, this is the time you really do have an opportunity to really flog, sell your wines. But often they land up getting discounted quite heavily during that Christmas period. And I was reading some articles about the port trade that was sort of implying that the big houses sort of almost crush everybody else, because when everybody else has got a chance to sell it, the big houses have got the marketing budgets to cut the price, and they really squeeze the small independent producers.
I find it really frustrating that, you know, as you say, it's the one time of the year when we know we have the consumer interest there. They're thinking towards port. Certainly if you go to any of the big consumer shows, they're, you know, the first thing they think about, and towards sort of October, November time, they're thinking about Christmas and saying, ah, we must buy that bottle for the big day. And yet all you're bombarded with in the major retailers are huge discounts and huge offers from the big houses. And it just seems such a shame when, if you could just see how difficult it is to make the wine, the whole infrastructure, you know, the terracing, the sheer heat that these the vigneron have to work in to actually make the wine. It really is a labour of love. And yet, you know, the one time we have the opportunity to show our wines and make sure that we've got really good prices, good value for money, we then slash them and say, great, have it for nothing.
And you can get it like a 10-year-old Tawny that's been made, it's been aged for 10 years, And that's what, under 15 quid usually?
Absolutely.
And that's still a good price at £15.
Sure. I mean, last year was very much, you know, a bit of an LBV moment. And, you know, prices in half. It doesn't really reinforce the premium quality image just to sell a few more bottles. And considering it is in the hands of a few, it would be quite nice to sort of see that there isn't this desperate rush for selling bottles. People are selling it for the wine that's in the bottle rather than just filling boxes and shelves.
What about other fortified, you know, port-like drinks? You know, Australia, if you go to Australia, even now you can still buy port.
Yes.
which is a bit iffy.
I'm sure not for much longer if no, the EDP get their act together.
I think the EU's, they've got a deal and it's being phased out now in Australia anyway. Yes. But the US is still pretty enthusiastic.
And I think there's nothing wrong with having a fortified liqueur, tawny
wine. South Africans
wine.
Do some great stuff and Rutherglen in Australia, you know, these are great fortified wines.
But I think they just need to find their own name. And, you know, certainly, obviously, from the champagne side of the business, you know, Spain have done it very well, Italy have done it very well. So port really, you know, if you have a fortified wine made in the port style, then fine, find your own name for your own region and leave our, you know, our wonderful demarcated region for us to have as our own name. I mean, it's in our hands to make sure that we're not doing anything bad within the region, and I think you have to have great winemaking skills, have a great winemaker. We're very lucky at Rosés to have a gentleman called Antonio Sereva. He was born in Pinhal. He's been at San Pedro, in fact, which was the first port house that Mr. Vranken bought in 1988. But he has been the chef de cave at Rosés since 1999, and I think he's brought his Bordeaux experience to really give us great winemaking. And I think as long as we sort of stick to that route and move away from just churning out bottles of wine, that they should be very proud to bear the port name.
What about, there's a lot of talk about, and I've tasted a few of wines from the Douro now as opposed to just port.
Sure.
Do you guys get involved in that at all?
We do a little bit of winemaking. We don't make very much, and there's always a scrabble between the different Franken companies around the world as to which market can grab it first and foremost. I think we have quite a tough job in a very established, mature port market that I think we've got more than enough to concentrate on and getting the Rosés name up to the front of people's mind before we start embarking on bringing some of our wine business through. But really, port is our passion, and I think more or less the wines that we're making are actually wines that we're using within our quintas for our entertaining purposes or our in-house drinking. So.
Okay. What about, like, Rosés, originally, they were a Bordeaux family, weren't they?
That's right.
You know,
well,
as opposed to, you know, the classic Portuguese families of Croft, Taylors and Dow, you know, which are very Portuguese names.
Exactly. Well, Austin Rosés actually was Portuguese by birth. But he actually went to Bordeaux and made his craft in Bordeaux. And it was only in sort of the early 1900s that in 1855, he came back to Portugal and decided to bring his French winemaking techniques to actually work in the Douro Valley.
He wasn't upset with the 1855 classification at Bordeaux.
Well,
was he?
You never know. I hadn't actually thought of that connection, but maybe he was working in an area where he didn't get, you know, the top slot, and decided, well, that's it. I'm off. I'm going home.
Yeah.
But I think he just brought those wonderful sort of Bordeaux, the big, elegant, big, full wines, and he actually brought those winemaking skills back. And it was in the 1910 when they actually set up in Vila Nova de Gaia. So they then had their lodge, which we still have in a nice little cobbled street just on the opposite side of on the Douro. And so that's nice to have that sort of tradition and history. And it was, in fact, his brother Edmund who actually sort of patented the dumpy bottle. Sounds very unromantic, doesn't it?
Yeah. Quite big,
tradition,
shoulder.
Absolutely.
Perfect for decanting off.
Sure, but he patented that bottle design, and that's actually the bottle that we're using for the Colours collection.
Oh, okay.
So the quirky twist originally was to have modern contemporary port, but in a very traditional bottle. And the colour bit came after because it just seemed to be quite fun. And I think sometimes we can be all too hung up on the museum and the historical. We have those historical references. We have a very prestige pedigree background. But at the same time, you can't live on that. You have to move forward. And the wines really should speak for themselves.
Just talking about Paul-François Vranken now. He's obviously building a bit of an empire.
Sure.
Started out with champagne,
yes.
Port. What's it like working from? What's the business feel like from the inside? And where do you think it's going to go?
Sure. What we're trying to do, what he's trying to achieve, is that he wants to make quality wine and quality wine only. So when he purchased Rosas in 1999, he didn't purchase any vineyards at all. And since 99, we've now accumulated over 300 hectares of A and B grade, obviously on the scale of A to F grade, yeah, within the region.
That's the way they classify the different quintas, really.
Quintas, exactly. So we have just A and B grade quintas. We now have 9 different quintas based in the Cima Corgo and the Douro Superior. So again, completely reinvesting. When he took over Quinta de Montsoul, which is in Cambre, which is just about 15 minutes from Pinal, he set about rebuilding the cuvery, the winery. I'm not quite sure what you call it in Porto, but probably it's the Quinta de Montsoul. he set about creating a new cuvery, and so that was completed in 2005. Brand new, state-of-the-art, wonderful stainless steel, mirrored stainless steel vats. Everything, all of the pipework is below ground. The building is clad in schist, so it kind of just, hopefully, over time, will fade into the landscape. But he is really invested in making quality winemaker. This isn't a short-term sort of investment gain. He really wants to make sure that we're continuing to produce quality wine.
You've got your colours there, so you're trying to innovate. Do you see,
yes,
is that part of the strategy of, you know, a lot of innovation, or is it more relying on traditional side of things?
I think there's a balance for the two. I think, you know, certain markets will be totally resistant to the colours collection. Sometimes there's a bit of a Marmite moment going on in terms of you either do or you don't when,
yeah,
you see the bottles. Certainly when we've been at consumer shows, that people are instantly drawn to the wonderful bottles in amongst this sea of darkness and instantly want to ask, what's inside the bottle?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think sometimes with port they don't necessarily do. They accept it's a bottle of port,
yeah,
but almost they'll then just taste and not really question what's inside. But because they're wonderfully sort of opaque bottles, they see a gold bottle and want to know what's in the gold bottle. And as soon as you start talking about 10-year-old Tawny, then how's Tawny made? What does it mean by saying 10 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully you can start some dialogue and the consumer, but you've managed to hook them in to be interested in port. And I think that's a big win for making people aware that it isn't just for that one time of the year consumption. We definitely loved serving it chilled, putting it with a starter. My personal favourite at the moment is something like some baked apples with sultanas, a big dollop of vanilla ice cream. Absolutely super. Those lovely sort of apricotty sort of spices coming through, and then a nice glass of chilled down of our white port. Absolutely delicious.
Okay, Sarah. I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic. I found Sarah to be a great person to interview. Roses was certainly a port house that is attempting to innovate, as well as hold on to some of their 150-year-old traditions. Next week, we stay with port, and I'm actually going to be talking with the winemaker and general manager of Roses, Antonio Savia, about what's going on in the Douro and Oporto. Antonio is not only the winemaker and general manager of Roses, he's a member of the Port Wine Company Association and a member of the Interprofessional Council of Douro and Port Wine Institute. We find out about what the different vineyard gradings mean and how come we're hearing more about Douro Reds. If you do want to know more about port and the different types of port, we interviewed Rod Smith, MW, from Metzendorf last year on show 29, and he went into a bit of detail about different styles of port and what sort of serving temperatures for port. So go back to that show if you're interested in learning more about port. But until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.